go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 65, yes, of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I am recording this episode on September 11th, 2024. So to all of you, a belated happy 9/11. That is my favorite joke that makes myself giggle that I tell on stage. I always make sure to perform stand-up comedy live on September 11th so that I could get on stage. And when I'm getting applause from the crowd after all that, I just say, happy 9/11, everybody. And I go about the rest of my set. Usually I dig a hole when I say that. But those who know, know. I am a believer. There are lots of these. You hear this. There are two types of people. You're either A or you're B. You're either this or you're not this. That's my thought process with 9/11. You either believe the narrative that our government would like us to believe, or you're skeptical of what happened that morning, not lovely in terms of what happened, but just the weather that morning was lovely. There's that nice northeast, sunny, crisp, early September morning, afternoon. If you don't believe the official narrative, you're on my side. There's no way that three pilots with barely any training were able to hijack planes with all that pressure, hit their targets directly. That is, you could Maverick from Top Gun. He wouldn't be able to hit the Pentagon at the angle and the speed at which we're supposed to believe happened that morning. But again, there are plenty of videos on YouTube and Rumble and other platforms where you can find out information about 9/11 and really go down that rabbit hole. It's deep, it's long. Deep and long. That's a little sexual innuendo there. Maybe we'll be getting to that in near future. But with that out of the way, if you do believe the narrative of 9/11, I suggest you watch some documentaries or read some Reddit forums and open your mind to what possibly could have happened. There's no fucking way they found the passport of the terrorist. His body vaporized, but they found his passport blocks away from 9/11. Yeah, in full gear, in little case, perfectly visible. That makes no sense. Also, I have a fun little joke I tell on stage where I say, the perfect way not to get a second date is mention Tower 7 on your first date. I've done that several times. Every time I've mentioned Tower 7 on date number one, with a new babe, I've never seen her again. I don't know. Something about the babes. 9/11 does not intrigue their interest. Although I do know some cool babes who are into that. Okay. Enough with 9/11. It's past. That was 23-24 years ago. Let's move forward. We got bigger things we got to talk about. Now, you know, the B-Man, I don't really talk much about pop culture. Reason being, I'm not really up to date too much with pop culture, but also I want these episodes of Verbal Graffiti. I want people to go back and listen to them years later and have them still be relevant. I had a written blog, After Time Expires. Go check that out on the internet, which was more up to date. So I just noticed a year or two later, nobody wants to read it ever again. So yeah, but I bring up this pop culture because I want to give a standing ovation. If I could stand up right now without knocking my mic over, I would. Standing ovation. David Grohl, is that his name? The lead singer of Foo Fighters, an ex-member of Nirvana, came out that he cheated on his wife, a wife he has three kids with, and now he got another floozy pregnant. I don't want to call her a slut or a whore, maybe a groupie. Maybe he's in love and this will be a love child. But that's that. I know we're big proponents of cheating here on Verbal Graffiti. That's all tongue in cheek, if that is the slang for it. But I shouldn't be cheating. The B-Man, Brian Glass, the People's Degenerate, I don't cheat because I'm a nobody. And you watching or listening to this right now, you shouldn't cheat. You shouldn't step out of pocket on your partner, whoever that may be. But David Grohl, a rock star, yes, that's what I want out of my American rock stars. I want my rock stars to be fucking groupies before they go on stage, after they get on stage, when they're blackout drunk. I don't want my rock stars to be my moral compass. I want them to be drinking bottles of Jack Daniels, straight swigging it, straight from the bottle. I want them to be doing lines of whatever they're doing without testing it for fentanyl. I want them to be on drugs, pills. I want their dicks in people and things that they don't even remember it days, months, the next morning. There's an essence to a rock star. You can't be a real, authentic rock star if you're a faithful husband and father. Those two don't jive. You're either one or you're the other. Now, you and me, we're not rock stars. We're not professional athletes. We're not selling out theaters. My rule is someone like David Grohl, the lead singer of Foo Fighters. Yes. If you're at a level of fame where you can sell out arenas, like people will spend money and you could sell out a 20,000 seater, a Madison Square Garden, you deserve the right to cheat on your wife. And your wife should allow, it's not that she shouldn't allow it, she should expect that to happen. Because when you marry Dave Grohl, when he gets on his knee and he proposes to you, in the back of your mind, as his future wife, you got to know, well, he's not going to be faithful because he's on stage, he's singing. There's 20,000 people who are singing the lyrics to his songs. Like, that's not somebody who's going to call you right after his show. He gets off stage, Madison Square Garden, 11 p.m. Hey, I love you. Let's FaceTime the kids before we go to sleep. And no, you hang up. No, I hang up. No, you hang up. No, I hang up. Please. None of that pillow lovey-dovey talk. You're a rock star. He'll get back to you in 3 months when he's done with the West Coast side of his national tour, world tour. I have a comedian friend. I think he quit doing stand-up. But he has a Foo Fighters tattoo on his forearm. What the fuck am I doing? I don't know. This is very Rolling Stones-esque what I got going on. Okay. Focus, B-Man. Focus. Yeah, I got a buddy. I know a guy who has a Foo Fighters tattoo. Doesn't know David Grohl. Doesn't know anyone personally in the band. But loves their music so much that he got a tattoo of the band. If that happens to you, if you're at a point where you're so successful that strangers are such a fan of you and your art and what you're creating that they ink themselves with you or your name or your project's name on their personhood, on their body, visible for all of us to see, that gives you license to fuck whoever you want, consensually, of course, but you get the fuck, you get to step out of pocket, you get license to cheat. It's almost like it's a passport for cheating. When someone else gets a tattoo, a stranger of you and your band or whatever project on their forearm, you have a passport to fuck whoever you want, and you don't need to apologize to anybody, and especially not your wife and not your children, because especially don't apologize to your children, because they get to travel with you and they're going to have so much sex because of who their daddy is. Because they're going to be in your world, which is drugs and alcohol and chaos. And I want you to rip up your hotel room. I think I read a story once, maybe it was Led Zeppelin. They were in a hotel room and they took their furniture in the hotel and they super glued it to the ceiling. So it was, the floor was empty, but the ceiling had all the bed and the chair and the TV on it. That's the chaos I want my rock stars to possess. And you best not. That's the one thing about Dave Grohl, him cheating on his wife and getting another babe pregnant, that makes me cringe, is that he came out with a public acknowledgement of what he did and an apology to his wife. Why are you apologizing, Dave, to your wife? You're the lead singer of the Foo Fighters. There were so many kids who were not even born when Nirvana, when you was still a thing, who now wear Nirvana t-shirts. That's how much power you've had, how much influence you've had. You should not apologize to your wife. What you should have done is look your wife in the eye, your wife in the eye, eye to eye, and go, babe, I'm Dave Grohl. This is why you're with me, because I'm a babe magnet, because I'm a rock star, and I'm going to put my dick in whatever I want to put it in, whenever it's available, consensually. So, Dave Grohl, good for you for being a real American rock star. We need more of that today. We need enough of these stupid DJs who just go, yeah, hype, and get 3,000 people in some warehouse jumping up and down with some neon crazy lights. No, rock star. Dave Grohl, he's a authentic rock star, just riffing with his guitar, belting out lyrics, and fucking floozies backstage after he sings his encore, which, what do you think his encore is? There Goes My Hero? I don't know. I don't go to concerts because I think they're wildly overpriced, and we've talked about this before. The B-Man is not a concert guy. So one more ovation for Dave Grohl for cheating on his wife and being a real American rock star. I'm proud of you, Dave. Keep stepping out of pocket on your wife and family. But try not getting other people pregnant. That makes it messy. But moving forward, if I could open my phone. Okay. This is something I found on Reddit, because that's what we do here at Verbal Graffiti, because I am not smart enough to come up with my own topics to discuss. So I go to Reddit, see what they're talking about there, and then I read it, and then I come up with my take that hopefully will make some of you laugh a little bit. By the way, half the reason why I'm doing Verbal Graffiti is to get famous so that I can cheat on my partner. I am single at the moment, but if I do have a girlfriend, a lover, and then this pops off, yeah, I'm going to cheat on her. That is the goal. There's a Seinfeld episode about that. All right. Reddit, this comes from the subreddit. Am I overreacting? AIO? Wife told me her ex was very well endowed. Ooh. Okay. This weekend, my wife and I, mid-30s, got a sitter for the kids and went out for a date night. As we were enjoying our night out, I ordered us a second bottle of wine. Hey, now. Eventually, the conversation turned to some fun questions regarding fantasies or things one of us would want to try. As we've been trying to spice things up after 8 years of marriage and raising children. Completely plausible. Good for you. Anyways, this is where things took a turn. I stupidly asked her the question of if she had ever done anal, that's with bleeped out, before, to which she told me her and her ex never tried it because he was much bigger, in quotation marks. Ugh. And it would not have been possible. I guess she saw the look on my face and apologized and tried to smooth it over, but it kind of shook me. Her and this guy remained friends after they split up, and now I'm feeling insecure, jealous, self-conscious. That's three adjectives. Am I overreacting to this? I'm definitely above average in that department, but it still rattles me. I don't believe you with that last sentence there, that you are above average in that department, and I believe that department is the size, the length, the girth of your penis. I don't believe you've 1 second saying that, but hey, I'm not here to judge penis size. That's not what we do. There's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot going on with this eighth year night out with your wife on her second bottle of wine that we got to address. And all your feelings are justified. The B-man, yes, I can completely understand how you are feeling self-conscious, that little tinge after she told you her ex was much, much bigger. If she had said her ex was bigger, that would not have been a big deal, because the babes, they're kind of hoary, right? They're kind of hoary these days, as are the guys who are capable of being whores. But most women these days, most girls are losing their virginity at 13, 14. So by the time they're in their mid-20s, they're dozens deep when it comes to men and women that they've had sexual relations with. So they've seen, let's say, at least 24 penises. So I'm doing the math. So you're mid-30s, you have 2 kids, you've been married 8 years. So let's say you start dating this babe, your now wife, in your mid-20s. And then the previous boyfriend, that was probably a long-standing relationship. And then she might have had a high school, first love, puppy love. So let's say she's had 3 significant relationships in her life. Okay, that's 3 penises. We know, at least of the 3, her ex, who is a Jason Love-esque, he has a power wiener, man. He has a wiener that can be on the front page of porno. That's the kind of wiener we're dealing with here. But those are probably not the 3 penises she's only seen in person. Because you got to think, well, she did a semester abroad, so that easily gives her 10 more wieners right there. And then she waitresses between semesters at college during breaks. That's probably another 10 to 20 penises she had her mouth on after shifts there. So yeah, your wife probably has seen at least 25 wieners. But the last 8 years, hopefully it's only been your wiener that she's felt inside of her. So why am I bringing this all up about your wife maybe being a whore? I'm trying to get my thoughts together. If she had just said, what I'm trying to get at is, okay, we're all in your shoes at this dinner. If your wife had just said he had a bigger wiener, it was too big to put in my tight, tight, youthful asshole when we dated, that's okay. Because every guy, no matter how big you are, you just have to assume whatever lady you're with at the moment, she's had guys with bigger wieners that have been girthier, they're more veiny, they're longer, they're more harder hitting than yours. You just got to assume that. It's a funny thing, right? We're all equal until we have to take our pants off and go hit the showers after gym class. Then we see who's equal to who and who is unequal and who is superior. It's funny how that works, isn't it? You got to brush that off. When your lady says, oh, I've been with a guy who's bigger, hey, that's life in 21st century Western culture. We all sleep around for the most part. So it's almost inevitable that your babe's going to have been on a bigger piece than your own. But the thing is, she said much bigger. That preface, much, that's what gave you the pain. That's what gave me the pain for you while reading your post that you posted on Reddit. Yeah, I felt that in my ballsack. Because when she uses the word much, much bigger, to me, that tells me she didn't marry you for your wiener. She married you because you're not You weren't the fuck boy. You were the safe guy. You were the guy who she could marry, who she could have a family with. And in that regard, you're the winner. So don't be self-conscious about that. You're taking your lady out for dinner. You're having a second bottle of wine. You're thinking about spicing life up. Life is good for you. The problem is your wife thinks about her ex while you're inside of your wife. So when you're penetrating your wife, you're not able to hit the spot that her ex hit. And that's your wife's fantasy. Your wife's fantasy is not anal. It has nothing to do with the backside. Your wife's fantasy is after dinner, you drop her off at her ex's place while you take care of the kids for the entire weekend, and she gets piped down by her ex and can get her cervix punctured. That's her fantasy. Now, she can't come out and say that, but on a second bottle of wine, the lips get a little loosened, and she uses the word much before bigger. That's why you're feeling this pain, and every feeling you have, like I previously said, you are in the right to have. Now, you can't express these emotions to your wife because you would come off as childish and not confident in yourself if you were to complain about her using that term. But really, there's nothing you can do. Like this guy, this ex, has a Pornhub front page wiener, and you don't. So unless you're willing to go chop off his wiener, hey, we're born with what we're born with. There's nothing to change there. You've been married 8+ years, so you can't ask her to end a friendship with him now. Because if the only reason why you want your wife to break off her friendship with her ex is because the only reason is because you now know he has a much bigger penis than you. That doesn't exude self-confidence, so you can't do that. That's not manly. Your woman won't respect that. What you need to do, as this has nothing to do with your wife. This is me, the B-man, talking to you. What you need to do is you need to learn how to love your penis. You need to learn. You got to look down at that thing, whatever you have, look at all the characteristics of yourself and love it. Love its characteristics. Love if it leans a little bit to the left, love how that makes it a little bit different than everybody else's wiener. You got to explore your wiener. You got to make love with your wiener. What you got to do, you need to become in tune with your penis to the point where your penis is you and you are your penis. And once you love your penis, it doesn't matter what any lady tells you. She could tell you have a small one. She can insult it. She could call it a little pinky wiener. She could give any insult you want, but it will not affect you because you love your penis. So when your lady comes at you with those childish insults about the size of your penis, you can look at her in the eyes, smile, and say namaste because you believe it. Because you can believe it. Because once you're in tune with your wiener, and you love what you have between your legs, and there's an essence to it. Like nothing can puncture that love fest. So the words, what's that saying? Words bounce off of you and stick on you. Well, your words, I bat them away with my wiener and give you a black eye and kick you out of the house. That's what you do when someone insults your wiener, but you love your wiener. That's what you need to do. And that takes time. It takes years. It doesn't take therapy. It takes you alone in a dark bedroom, playing with yourself, talking to yourself, giving yourself a pep talk. You got to talk out loud to your piece, and over time you will love your penis. I'm not first page of Pornhub down there. No one wants to film that, but you can't come at me with a little, oh, you got a micro one, which I don't, but hey, you can come at me with any insult. I brush it off because me, Mr. Perfect, we're a duo, and if you don't love them, then we don't want you anyway. Last thing, I know I've been rambling a bit on this one. I have to say it. I probably should have brought this up in the very beginning. You're not an anal guy. And allow me to explain. You, in your post, the word anal, A-N-A-L, the second A, you put a star to kind of blur it out. There, one, two, you brought up the topic of anal sex. 8 years and two kids into your marriage. That's when you brought up the topic of anal sex for the first time with your wife. Talk about playing it slow. The B-man, I suggest you bring up anal date one within the first month of seeing each other at the latest. Personally, me, the B-man, I usually bring up anal before date one. But also, I talk about Tower 7 on first dates too, so maybe don't be that aggressive with it. But the fact that you waited this long to even bring up the topic anal tells me you are not an anal guy. And even if your wife is open if she's open to having her tight anus spread wide with your above average wiener as you shove it in there, I don't think you could perform anal on your wife. I don't think you have it in you. When I read your post and that it took you that long, 8 years, maybe 10 plus years together to even muster up the courage to broach the topic of anal sex. That tells me, I get the sense that you're the type of guy who would get anal done to him by another guy in a missionary position. So you'd be laying on your back while a gay guy gives you anal missionary from the front. Not saying there's anything. Yeah, that's just the vibe I get from you. Just forget about anal. Forget about this guy's wiener. It's not going to happen. One last little thing. Your wife has had anal sex before. You women are very... Women know how to... How shall I explain this? You know how to... Women are almost Muhammad Ali-like when it comes to answering sexual questions without answering them. You're very skilled at bobbing and weaving and not getting hit and jabbing answers that don't give us the answer. If you notice what your wife said she had not had anal sex with her previous ex-boyfriend. Is that a no? No, that's not a no. Is it, hey, have you had anal sex? No. She did not say no. She merely said, I have not had anal sex with my ex. So she didn't lie to you, but she didn't tell you the truth either. Your wife, she's had anal before. So that's probably what you should be bringing up. Nothing about her ex's size and how that makes you self-conscious. It should be, okay, well, you didn't have sex with your ex. The follow-up should be, what about anybody else? And then pin her down, get the real answers out of her. You've been married 10 years. You deserve those answers. I'm happy you have a above average wiener. Not all of us could be so lucky. But I mean, you're the husband. You're the father. But you're not the guy that's able to bring your wife down into the vortex and have her limping into work the next morning, asking her colleague if she has any leave that she can have or not. You're not that guy. Be okay with it, though, because you got everything else. So be thankful that you have what you have. Let's go look at some photos, let's go look at some photos. Welcome back to episode 64 of Verbal Graffiti. That's right, not episode 65. I was wrong in the intro to this episode. I said it was episode 65. I don't know how to count. That's why the B-Man tries to be funny. This is actually episode 64. God forbid, who knows what's going to happen when we get to triple and four digits with this project. We'll see how many times I mess it up. I believe that's the first time. Sorry as I crack my knuckle. My room smells, okay? Okay, this studio is my bedroom. Right beyond the camera, I have my mattress pinned up against the wall. That's how I film. It's a small bedroom. When I set everything up, I sleep on my mattress on the floor. I don't know if I should admit that, but when it comes game time and I got to film episodes, I lift it up and put the camera and, you know, pull open the shades and we get going. Problem is, I sweat a lot when I sleep, and these last month or so, I wake up almost every day, and maybe 4 or 5 in the morning, my bed is soaked. It feels like I pissed the bed. Thankfully, I sleep alone and don't have many sexual partners, so it's usually just me. But if I ever had a sexual partner, she would think I pee the bed all the time. But I don't, because literally, I wake up. I wake up in a deep sweat that I need to change my boxer shorts because that's what I sleep in. I sleep in my boxer shorts, nothing else. How you babies doing? But when I wake up, they're soaked, so I have to take them off, so I sleep naked. But I have a queen-size bed, so what I do is I take my pillow, I turn it inside out, I put it on the other side of the bed, and then I move over to the non-wet or the dry side of the bed, and I sleep there till the rest of the night, until I wake up in the morning. That happens almost every night. So I kind of go back. So the next night, I start out sleeping on the dry side, and then once I wake up in a deep sweat, I will transfer over to the wet side from the previous night, but that's usually dried a little bit, so I'm able to be somewhat comfortable on that side. And usually I'm usually washing my sheets. And when I say sheets, I mean everything. I wash my sheets, my pillow case, my blanket, the top cover. I wash everything. I usually do that at least twice a week. I've gone maybe, let's see, today is Monday, so I've gone probably 4 days without washing my linens, and my room, I almost feel bad for you babes who have never been in a high school, in a men's locker room after gym class or after like a basketball practice. That's the smell that I have right now. If you're a fellow watching this and you've been in a locker room in high school when all that testosterone was through the roof, and it's just that odor, that reek, and guys back then, you know, don't really shower every day because we're disgusting creatures. That's the smell. My room, my studio right now smells like a public school locker room after basketball JV practice. Oh, I gotta wash my sheets after this. Also, I'm wearing jeans. It's September. I never wear jeans in the summer. From probably late May to September, I don't wear jeans, but I have one pair of jeans, so I'm back to wearing them since the summer. Not officially, but it is over. This room just reeks. A lot going wrong. I'm messing up number episodes. Can't get my thoughts straight because of the odor that's coming from my bed that's up against my wall. And got to get back to wearing jeans again. Let's move it along. Something else I found on Reddit this week comes from the subreddit alcohol. I know something about that. Tequila. I'm a pretty skinny individual, but recently me and my friend did shots of tequila, and it was not very good for me. You don't say. I think I did maybe 5 shots within 20 minutes. I'm not exactly sure. And soon started falling after a while. I fell straight on my face, causing my nose to start bleeding, and many times after that. After the first fall, I don't remember what happened after that. Is this normal? I consider myself a lightweight, but I didn't expect I would experience the shots to quite an extreme level. I woke up with bruises all over my body and my nose. Has anyone else experienced this? Crying emoji. Welcome to Dancing with Tequila. Yes, this is normal. This is what happens when you drink 5 shots of tequila as a lightweight within a 30-minute time frame. So you drank 5 shots of tequila before the closing credits of a Seinfeld episode. This is what you should expect every time. Even if you gain weight and become a middleweight tequila drinker, this is how your night is going to end, with being blacked out, waking up with bruises all over your body, blood stains on your carpet, wondering what happened, and being petrified of having to look at your phone and see who you called and who you texted and who you made contact with and what you said while you were blacked out the night before. This is wild to me. I'm assuming you're a younger, late teens, early 20s lady. If you're drinking shots of tequila, that's usually a young college age range drink for the ladies to be doing shots of. So if I'm wrong with that, my apologies. But I'm sure there are many ladies who have been in this situation, as have I. As a guy who, I'm 160 pounds, so I am a lightweight. This is what happens when you drink. So I think a glass is 8 ounces. So you drink almost a glass of tequila in half an hour. You should be thankful that this was how your night ended, with some bruises and having to clean up your carpet and maybe put some tissue paper in your nostrils to prevent the bleeding from starting again. Because there are many of us tequila drinkers out there, and I could testify, who you wake up and you're not in a familiar location. You're not in your own bedroom or your own house or your friend's house. Sometimes you wake up in a bed in an apartment building, in a apartment that you don't know the location of, and you turn over and you look at the stranger next to you, and you have to nudge him or her. And when she wakes or he wakes up, you have to make that awkward eye contact and ask the probing question, which is, did we do that? And then the follow-up, did we use protection? That's the type of thing that can happen to you when you do 5 shots of tequila within a 30-minute time frame. All tequila drinkers, all of us, all of you out there, have had situations where you wake up next to a stranger, or you wake up in handcuffs or in a cage, and you had an interaction with a police officer where you said the line, "Do you not know who I am? Do you not know who I am?" That's what happens. That's the type of way your mind goes sideways when you start shots of tequila. Don't listen to the rap song. Shot, 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 shot. No. Shot, mixed drink, pace yourself. It's all about pacing yourself, especially as a lightweight. So you woke up after 5 shots of tequila looking like you just got beaten in the cage by Sean O'Malley. Take this as a learning experience. Now, I could say, as I just did, pace yourself, drink water in between each drink. It ain't going to happen. You're too young. You're too spry. This is how the drinking game is at your age. You're going to get blackout drunk again. You're going to think, well, that was tequila, let me try it with rum. And then you'll do 5 shots of rum before Seinfeld episode ends. And you're going to wake up with bruises all over your body, questioning how you got them. I've been there. I remember when I was younger, I believe in high school, maybe early college, we had a game we called the Annihilator. And what me and my buddies would do is we'd go to house parties, because we lived in the suburbs, not a city. So that's where you drink, either in the woods or at a house when someone's parents go away. Back then, at least that's how it was. Me and my buddies, my boys, the bros, what we would do, the gals, a couple of them too, we would take the big bucket of cheese balls that you get at Costco's, and we would eat all the cheese balls during the week. And then on a Friday or Saturday or whenever we were going out, we would clean it out. We would fill it with a bottle of grain alcohol and Powerade, and we'd swish it all up. So some of you, I guess it's a type of jungle juice. Everyone's got a different type of jungle juice. But what we would do is we would, at the top of the cheese ball bin, we would drill two holes. Then we would get those long pixie sticks, the sugar, the pixie sticks, the long, like, 2-foot ones. We'd cut them. Make a straw, you know, dump all the sugar out, make two straws. So you have two holes, two straws in the cheese bin that is now jungle juice of grain alcohol and some type of Powerade or Gatorade or sports drink. And two, and we compete. So we have one person one straw, one person another straw. We'd have a referee, a friend who would say, go. And whoever, we would just start sucking up the alcohol, and whoever stopped sucking first was the loser. And whoever won, well, yeah, you usually both ended up passed out in a corner of someone's bedroom or living room. And we would do that every weekend. Every weekend, senior year of high school was annihilator. And we thought that was fun. Looking back, that was pure stupidity. I should have been castrated. I should not be allowed to have children after thinking an activity like that was worthwhile. I cringe looking back, but hey, that's what you do when you're 19, 20 years old. That's what you're doing. You're drinking five shots of tequila. Take this as a learning experience. Also, another time when I was at UConn, a University of Connecticut, as an undergrad, I got caught drinking in a hallway of a dorm room or dorm facility. So I had to go to, I didn't get arrested, but I had to go to a somewhat of an AA type class on campus at UConn. And there were a bunch of us there. I didn't know anybody at the time. It was the end of the weekend. Anyone who got caught drinking had to go to this course Monday or Tuesday, early evening. So we're in there, and the teachers giving a spiel about how awful alcohol is and how you shouldn't drink. And I raised my hand and I stood up. I stood up in front of all of us alcoholics. And I said, no. Sometimes it's good to drink too much alcohol and feel the effects of it. Because then after you do that and you experience the awful hangover and again, the blackout and the embarrassment and hurting yourself while drinking alcohol, that makes you appreciate the powerfulness of alcohol. So sometimes it's valuable to go through that so you can be leery of alcohol and what it can do to you. And the teacher had such a horrified look on her face, but everyone else in the class, everyone who had gotten caught drinking, looked at me and go, yeah, the B-man, he's onto something. He's right. That's a good take. It's the only time in my life that I felt like I was the head of a revolution. I was a leader. I was a rebel. But I do believe everything I said, and I was able to rally the class around the AA teacher. And she shut it down real quick, but I felt alive in that moment when I was trying to explain how powerful alcohol can be and how it can alter your life very quickly in one evening or late early morning if you go all night long. I don't know why I'm saying all this. You're not going to listen to any of this. You're going to continue to binge drink and do so for the next 5 to 10 years. Hopefully you end before the age you're 30. All I'm going to say, if you're going to be drinking tequila, don't be drinking well bottom shelf tequila. Find something middle shelf or higher, Patron, the one that comes in a skeleton bottle or above. Don't be fucking with bottom shelf tequila. That will make your head feel like you need to have surgery on your brain. So yeah, middle shelf tequila and above, and have fun with your binge drinking and write all these down. It's painful in the moment, but it's going to make for fun stories years from now when you get together with your friends. Yeah. So you and everybody else, go suck a fat one.